Welcome back to the Buffalo Bread Podcast. We have our Week 10 recap of the Buffalo Bills versus the Indianapolis Colts, which was played this past Sunday in Indianapolis. That game, I think it turned out better in some ways than either of us expected, given the Colts' history this season, Dan. What do you think about, what are your general feelings about the way that game kind of shook out?
The Bills are the master of the ugly 30-point game, and it's something that I'm coming to accept at this point. What I do like about how this team can win is that, similar to last season, they can find a multitude of different ways to beat you if you're a certain tier team. Now, again, this is a group that's about to be tested with a 5-game stretch coming up here on the schedule that starts with Kansas City. But for the opponents that have been put in front of the Bills, they have done a really good job winning in a variety of ways. And JJ, the positive news if you're a Bills fan is that this is an 8-2 team with an extended lead in the division, and it doesn't feel like yet they have put together a complete game of football. It feels like they're still fighting themselves a little bit in the pass game in particular, which I'm sure we're going to get to in this recap. So if the Bills can hit the end of the season in stride, with all of these components sliding into place on the defense and the offense, this could be a pretty scary team come playoff time.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that that's one of the things that you kind of hear as a refrain from many of the Bills beat reporters is that this is a team that still hasn't played its best football. And once they do, it could be a scary team. But how many times have we heard that, narrative throughout the Bills seasons under Sean McDermott?
Several.
Yeah, exactly.
Hopefully.
Sometimes it's a matter of, you have to ask the question of is it just that they're always going to be inconsistent? I mean, in the playoff exits, they've had inconsistency in their, stretches of losses at times. They've had inconsistency. Is the answer that this team is always going to be just slightly inconsistent?
I think there's a couple of things that in the past have held this team back from really reaching its ceiling. First, it's that general health of the squad. It feels like every year we're dealing with some sort of debilitating injury, be it on the offense or be it on the defense. This season in particular, while I know a lot of the press and the attention was on the Milano injury and some of the injuries on the defense, JJ, the health of this pass catching room, I think has made it really hard week to week for Josh, in a room full of basically new weapons outside of Kincaid and Shakir, to really find a rhythm with this group offensively. And it's not going to get any better against KC in the coming week because Keon Coleman, we know for sure, is going to be out for that game. McDermott's already ruled him out, and Amari Cooper is a big question mark. So I think year after year, it's a different version of the same story, which is why the Bills struggle to often reach their ceiling and hit their stride when we want them to.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. I think that maybe that's a better kind of thing to focus on with why this team always seems to be inconsistent is they are almost always missing key contributors. And that can be said about almost all teams at all times in the league, but it's peculiar with the Bills because the misses are often such critical pieces of very important parts of their game. In order to put a full and complete game together in the Sean McDermott defense, you need your safeties healthy. You need your middle linebacker healthy. And you need kind of the center, kind of right up the gut of your defense. You need your defensive tackles healthy. And those are three areas that the Bills have struggled with having injuries over the years, linebackers, safeties, and DBs in general, and then tackles. I think it's interesting that that's kind of part of it that plays into it for sure. But I also think it's something that no team in the league can really count on. No team can say we're 100% healthy or we can count on being that. The year the Bills, the 13 seconds year, is one of the healthiest seasons the Bills have had overall. And I think that that showed in their kind of absolute trouncing of the Patriots in the playoffs. And then, of course, in playing the eventual Super Bowl champion Chiefs so hard in that game. I think that in the games that they were, put all together, all three phases of football performances, I think of the first Dolphins game, I think of the Jaguars game. In those kind of efforts, those complete victories, I don't know. Not even the undefeated Chiefs seem to be a team that could stand up to that level of precision and efficacy. And so I know we're going to talk about that down the line in our Chiefs preview later this week. But it's really a question of like, is this the team that can get it all done? And you're right. I think that maybe the biggest difference with so many teams we've seen who were absolutely considered contenders for good reasons, mostly because of Josh Allen, but also because of the way this operation is run, the defense and the way that they do not give up big plays, smartly coached, smartly played. Is this the team that can finally kind of get hot at the exact right time and maybe not be completely derailed playing off the couch retired players as starting linebackers in the playoffs because they're so injury depleted they have no other option?
No shade at AJ Klein, by the way, who you were naming namelessly.
I would not expect him to have performed any better given his status in life. It's just they were in a pinch and that he was the only answer.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. He was not put in a position to succeed. But where the Bills did succeed, JJ, was their game against the Colts this week. It was the first time the Colts this season in 10 weeks had lost a game by more than one score or participated in a game to conclusion that ended with them losing or winning by more than one score. And the Bills, I think other than a garbage time touchdown at the end of the game, I think the Bills held their own for a majority of that game. The run defense looked shaky in the first half, as it has in so many games this season. And then per the way it was designed, the game script on offense went more their way. The Colts had to rush less. Jonathan Taylor only 7 rushes in the second half for a total of 5 yards. The Bills absolutely locked him up. But also the offense was doing its job, not as efficiently as we've seen it, but it was doing its job, flipping the game script in a way that was going to be much more favorable to the Bills' defense, complementary football, as McDermott likes to say, and force the Colts to kind of play into their hands, which is ultimately what happened. JJ, we were also so close to nailing our prediction about Flacco getting benched for Anthony Richardson. We literally said, this feels like a game where it could get away from Flacco and he could throw like 3 picks. And then at some point we're seeing Anthony Richardson. So Flacco did indeed throw 3 picks. And he had a fumble, 4 total turnovers in this game. Sacked 4 times by the Bills as well under what seemed like constant duress. And another big Greg Rousseau game here. So JJ, it was not pretty at times, but it was exactly the type of win you expect this Bills team to put together these days. Where do you want to start? Bills offense or Bills defense?
Let's start with Bills defense, since you already sort of kind of teed off on that a little bit with the Flacco sacks, interceptions, and fumble lost. I really liked what I saw from this defense. And while I was watching this game, the thing I kept thinking about is our conversation about the Bills run defense and how, but by the look test, it seems completely porous and miserable and terrible. But once you dig into the advanced analytics in terms of rush success rate, EPA per rush, that they've really been top 5, top 10 in the league. They've actually started in the last 3 or 4 games hitting beyond top 10, working their way towards the upper part of the league in success on stopping the rush. And this game, even with, 121 rushing yards by the Colts, their ability to cancel successful rush pit plays by the Colts was at an all-time high in terms of, they were not, Jonathan Taylor busted one big run, but for the most part, his yards per carry was pretty low, and he was not getting at least 40 to 50% of the expected yards on each play that he needed to get in order to help them stay ahead of the sticks. And so this was a perfect example of, They only played heavy boxes 28% of the time, and they still kept the rushing game down with who is a really excellent runner in this league, still elite at his age.
Yeah, absolutely. And, Greg Rousseau continues to impress in both the run game and the pass rush game. I feel like we've lauded him a lot this season. I want to turn it over to Taron Johnson. Not only because he had that awesome pick 6 to start the game. I mean, what a way to start the game on defense. But when I looked at a lot of the film from the Miami game last week, we had noted in that recap that Ed Oliver seemed to be getting pushed around by Liam Eikenberg any chance he got. What Mike McDaniel did neutralizing Taron Johnson in the run game, where so often he kind of has that fit over a third linebacker. I mean, finding a way to release a guard in the second level to neutralize Taron Johnson, having a wide receiver erase Johnson from run stop coverage was really well done. Johnson was way more on his game, finding his run fits a lot quicker on defense. He, to me, JJ, is such a crucial part of this defense. And it seems like he is, even in Bill's media world where he is so respected, it feels like game to game, because Rousseau is coming up with these splash plays, we are forgetting how integral Taron Johnson is to what they want to do, not just in the pass defense game, but in the run stop game as well. And this is a game where, because he found his fit so quickly, he was really a difference maker, particularly in that second half and shutting down this Colts rush offense.
Yeah, Taron Johnson is, you know, I'll say he's the absolute best slot corner in the entire NFL at fitting the run. You don't need to remove him and add a third linebacker, and they don't, because he fills gaps like he's Khalil Mack. He fills gaps like he's twice his weight and twice his strength. And it's excellent to watch. I mean, it's the most exciting thing to watch as a Bills fan, because you know you got your guy. He was, what, like a fifth-round pick? That is such value in the draft to turn around a Weber State product into the best run support corner in the league and one of the best coverage corners in the league in the slot. So, yeah, Taron Johnson's game is massive. Just a quick note on Greg Rousseau. His ability to set the edge in the run is like just sexy as hell to watch. Game in, game out, you watch him, like he works, he's being actively engaged in blocks and he's still just tackling running backs. He just like doesn't care that there's a human being who's like 320 pounds pushing on him with incredible, you know, benches, 600 pound strength. He just is like, nah, I'm just going to keep working my way towards the edge and turn this thing up inside and use my giant pterodactyl wingspan to bring this guy to the ground. It's amazing.
It is. He's having such a good season, too, at a time where we really needed him to. Now, I know sack production has not been where folks would like to see it, but he is a difference maker on almost every play, it feels like. Now, we have joked, and by we, I mean me, of putting Greg Rousseau in the Jerry Hughes zone where it's all pressure, no sacks. But, dude, his pressure is meaningful. He's laying hands on QBs. He's eating up double teams, to your point earlier, setting the edge on the run in a way we have not seen an edge defender do in this unit in a very, very long time. He is having as good a season, minus the sack production, as one could have, and he is an actual legitimate disruptor. And to me, JJ, it's made all the more amazing by the fact that no one else on that defensive line, save for Dwayne Carter, I think in spurts when he's been healthy, has played up to the level we thought they could. I mean, DaQuan Jones, we talked about it last week, is getting erased in double teams. Ed Oliver, your comment last week about his little piston arms not pistoning anymore, right? He seems a little bit slow on the get off, and it just is, he's getting pushed around by interior offensive linemen. And then Epineza has always been inconsistent in his run fits, but he's had some splash sacks. So Rousseau is doing this. I don't want to make it seem like it's this Herculean effort where he's the only guy producing, because there are other guys producing in spurts, but he is the only one in my mind, for my money, JJ, who's doing it consistently week in and week out and in meaningful spots as well.
So Greg Rousseau, I'll give all the listeners another analogy to Greg, or to, I'm sorry, to Ed Oliver's hand fighting. Ed Oliver last season was a expensive Vitamix blender. He was the blades in the bottom of a Vitamix blender anytime somebody tried to get hands on him, in terms of how his little arms were swinging around in ferocious little circles. This season, he's like your grandpa's oster that has been hand down four generations, can no longer make a smoothie and only one half of the blades are still there. That is like, people get their hands on him and they stick to him. And that's never happened in his career. I don't know what happened to Ed Oliver. Also,
Go ahead. Yeah.
Oh, I was just going to say also as an aside, I think Daquan Jones was sort of playing out of his mind through week five last year. And this is more accurate to what you see, what Daquan Jones' game is.
Yeah, I appreciate what Daquan Jones has meant to this defensive line. I you could argue that since Star Lotulelei was on the squad, he has been the best running mate for Ed Oliver on that defensive line. My concern was always his age, the tread on the tires, so to speak, and how quickly at that position decline comes as you age out of it. And I just think we're seeing that with Daquan Jones, especially when you take into account the severity of the injuries that he's had pile up over the past couple of seasons. I think his decline was somewhat inevitable, though we hoped he could stave it off for a little bit of time. And listen, he's a veteran player. Maybe he's got some juice left for a hopeful playoff run here, but he looks pretty ineffectual at this point. JJ, another area I want to point your attention to is in the secondary, because while this Buffalo Bills secondary, Taron Johnson, the surprising play of DeMar Hamlin, Taylor Rapp's consistency, and of course the lockdown nature of Christian Benford have all been really great stories, Rasul Douglas seems to be, as Benford's running mate, seems to be struggling over the past couple of weeks in pass coverage. Over the past, and by couple I mean 4 weeks, over the past 4 weeks, QBs have an average QB rating of 117.5 when they're targeting Rasul Douglas. Now listen, when you're going up against the Buffalo Bills, you do not want to test Christian Benford too often. So of course Douglas is going to see his fair share of reps come his way. But still, JJ, based on what we saw last year and the fact that this dude is an opportunistic corner who, when he closes in separation, seems to come away with a pick, he hasn't been generating a ton of turnovers over this latter part of the first half of the season, and he's allowing a lot more separation on average than he did last year. And he's giving up a lot more yak so far over the last 4 weeks than he did to start the season as well. JJ, are you concerned about Rasul Douglas being right now maybe a sneaky weak link in that secondary?
I am, because I've noticed the same thing you have in that he has not been the kind of tenacious in-your-face corner that he showed out to be all last year after the trade deadline. I'm not sure what's going on. He hasn't really had any reported injuries of any kind or anything that would cause him to be, like, you know, responding a little bit slower to coverage snaps. So yeah, it's a curious thing, but it also, in a lot of ways, you know, it sort of makes the fact that the Bills did not choose to extend him and that he's playing out the last year of his deal make a little bit more sense, in that they might know something, of course, seeing him every day in practice or in the game, to say that what he was presenting last year with, what was it, like he had an interception in four consecutive games or something like that, like that was not necessarily his regular standard production and might have been sort of a fluke a little bit. That would make some more sense. All I'm going to say, they have Kyrie Elam for one more year. If they feel like Christian Benford is the guy, right, and then Rasul Douglas is not getting it done, maybe it's Kyrie Elam's opportunity to earn a starting job.
He's played well in the limited reps we've seen him this season. He's managed to, I think, maintain his physicality without getting flagged so much for his pure aggression. And I think that was the thing, by and large, that was holding him back from being a regular part of this rotation. But I agree with you. Listen, ride with Douglas. It wasn't too long ago we were calling Douglas and Benford potentially the best cornerback duo in the league, or at the very least in the AFC East. Ride with it. But I do think it's a trend worth noting, especially as we head into this stretch where we're going to be facing KC, bye week, San Francisco, LA, and Detroit. Those are teams with legitimate wide receiver weapons, and it's going to be very, very interesting to see how Douglas holds up. At the end of that stretch, you could be looking at, especially to JJ, if the Bills do in fact have the division locked up by early December, you could be looking at Kyer Elam getting a little bit more run to see what his usage is going to be like in the postseason.
And I like it, because I think that Kyer Elam, a couple of things that I was always really upset about after the Kyrie Elam pick when he would get on the field is that he didn't have a great feel for zone coverage. He didn't know how to squeeze routes from his designated zone. He would sort of hit his landmark and just sit there as people gained separation around him. Or he would hit his landmark, stay there, and then lock onto one target in his zone and not recognize that there was somebody sneaking behind him in coverage. And so those things have actually improved quite a bit in kind of rewatching the Colts game in all 22 for his few snaps. And then just other times throughout the season that he's been on the field, especially late in games when the Bills are winning, he's shown out pretty well. And then, of course, the game that Christian Benford was fully out, Kyrie Elam has presented pretty well.
Yeah, absolutely. JJ, I want to flip it over to the offensive side of the ball here. And kind of in the same way that we went good and bad on the defensive side of the ball, I want to do the same thing offensively. But I want to start with bad because I want to end on a high note, because I think there was more to like about the Bills' offensive effort than the tape and the stats would allow. But I want to start with something and I want to get your take. Dalton Kincaid. Now, I know he's struggling with a knee injury. Looks like he got pretty banged up in this Colts game. But this has not been the season we expected from Kincaid. Now, granted, tight ends, it takes them a while to find their fit in the league. And this is only his halfway. We are only halfway through the second season. But JJ, I think it's fair to ask, is Kincaid regressing at this point? He is on pace for less total receiving yards than he had last season, despite the fact that he's been targeted at a higher rate this year than he was in his rookie year. Over the past 2 weeks, he has seen a total of 15 targets, and he's only hauled in 6 of those catches for 56 yards over the last 2 weeks. His catch rate over expected this season is minus 12.5%. Now, you pointed out very astutely, I think, last pod, that they are using him in far more downfield situations than they did in his rookie year. And his air yards per target has increased from 5.5 yards last year to 7.6 yards this year, which tells me, yes, they're using him further down the field. But JJ, is this a skill thing or is this a scheme thing? Because some of these numbers for Kincaid, they do point to a downward turn and not the growth and development we thought we would get.
I worry a little bit. It's a skill thing because, you know, as you mentioned, scheme wise, he's been asked to do more that he's unfamiliar, uncomfortable with. But skill wise, I think that there's something to be said for this dude's been battling injuries, it seems, ever since he came into the league. And that we've seen that from so many promising, you know, young football players off of their rookie first year, second year, that they start to like drag around these big time injuries because they're playing in a big time league and they look less effective. And sometimes they recover fine. Sometimes, you know, it's the kind of thing where they realize over time that they're always going to be injured and they play through it. They buck up. And other times it's like, oh, well, they were not able to rise up to the physicality of the league and it was sort of too much for them. So the question I have right now is like, what did the second half of this season look like for Kincaid? And most specifically, the biggest thing I'm interested in is what does Kincaid's usage look like in games if they can get some kind of a stretch where Amari Cooper and Keon Coleman are both on the field?
And that's the hard part to gauge, too, because as we have noted, this wide receiver room has been a constant work in progress. You had Mac Hollins through the first 3 games, who seemed to be your wide receiver one, despite all logic pointing to the fact that he shouldn't. Khalil Shakir in and out early in the season, banged up a little bit. Keon Coleman is a rookie finding his way. The Amari Cooper piece seemed so important because then everybody slotted exactly the way they needed it to be. And it's no coincidence that in the one game this pass catcher room has played together fully healthy, Kincaid had one of the stronger games of the season. So it could be a skill thing, but I'm thinking scheme. Not that Brady is scheming up poorly for Kincaid, but I do think they have a vision for his skill set in this scheme, but it does rely so heavily on everybody else doing their 1/11th on that offense for it to work. So I've got I've got concerns, JJ, that we might not fully realize that vision because I don't know that this pass catcher room is going to be healthy. We know they're not going to be healthy for the KC game, and that's a big one, right? So if you're Joe Brady, do you ask yourself, I'm going to be without Keon Coleman against KC. I'm potentially going to be without Amari Cooper. Do I need to use this young tight end weapon in a different way than I have been to maximize not just his role in the offense, but try to maximize the offense? Because this was not a great Josh Allen game either, right? And we saw for one of the few times this season, the Houston game being another notable one, where his completion rate over expected was below where it should have been. And I mean, he missed on quite a few throws in this game. That wide open look to Kincaid, where it felt like Kincaid hitched a little bit on that first quarter route where Josh just missed him. But outside of that, that was a very, very play that Josh should have connected on. There just seems to be something, JJ, that is not yet fully realized in this passing offense that I can't quite put my finger on. I am chalking it up to health like I've been consistently throughout the course of this pod. And I hope I'm right. And I'm hoping they're healthy. We see what this pass game could look like because that feels like the one piece of this offense they're lacking in identity. Their identity in the run game is very, very clear, very, very well defined. And that's also where they've been the healthiest on the offensive line and in the running back room this season. The pass game, though, doesn't feel as quite well defined at this point in the season.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think that it's the biggest thing is like who's available and how much rapport do they have with Josh Allen. If I'm watching this team and having so much familiarity watching every snap of Josh Allen's career, what I see is a lot of players that he's not super comfortable with other than Khalil Shakir in the wide receiver room and other than Dawson Knox in the tight end room. And that includes Kincaid. I think that they being Allen and Kincaid, put a lot of effort and energy this offseason into being more familiar with each other, spending time on and off the field, building that rapport. But it still doesn't seem like he perfectly knows, you know, how to hit Kincaid where he wants the ball and where to kind of throw it on certain routes. He tends to sail balls on Kincaid a little bit more than expected. And so I think that, you know, it's a question of, where do we, you know, if we take a snapshot of now and then take a snapshot of the final game of the season, of the regular season that Josh Allen and the starting offense plays in, what does that look like? And who steps up? Who stands out on the receivers, specifically the receiver room and tight end room? And who kind of fades into the background a little bit? Because I was actually, I mean, this Colts game, I know Keon Coleman's not out there. I know, you know, Cooper's not out there. Mac Hollins like impressed me. I had said multiple times I didn't think he had any value to this team other than a fourth or fifth wide receiver and special teams. But he, you know, when push came to shove, he had a lot of very clutch moments and very excellent routes.
Yeah, absolutely. Clutch, I think, is the perfect way to define Mac Hollins' performance in that game. And listen, give the guy his flowers because we have been, I think, rightfully critical of his outsized role early on in the season in the passing game. I love the fact, too, that early on you saw Curtis Samuel, Joe Brady try to get Curtis Samuel going as well. They're just kicking the tires on so many of these pass catchers still, JJ. You wonder if the clock isn't going to run out eventually. Because otherwise, offensively, this is a team that's got a pretty clear identity. That offensive line continues to grate in the run game, and they get better, it feels like, each and every game. In addition to that, their pass block win rate has gone all the way up to fourth, according to ESPN Stats and Info this year. So this is a crew that is winning at the point of attack in a way that we, and by we I mean me, didn't think could be replicated based off the stellar performance of last year's offensive line. But this group, while they still have not hit the statistical heights of last year's group, they are approaching that point, and they're approaching that point at the right time. And dude, James Cook, like, not his best game statistically of the season, but when you watch it on film, that dude is running fast. He is running angry. Like, he is as complete a back as there is in the league. I put him up there with the McCaffreys and the Barkleys as far as what his impact on this offense can be for the Buffalo Bills moving forward. again, a lot to like there. We saw Brady go a little bit away from the run game in the second quarter, which we've seen him do a few times in his play sequencing when it looks like the defense is sort of figuring something out on the run game. But he very wisely went back to it, particularly in the second half as the Bills were starting to close things out. JJ, game script didn't always go the way the Bills wanted it, but they all ended up pulling out the win in the end. And again, there's a lot to like about this team's offensive identity. If they can get a passing game that complements this run game, it's gonna be a scary year to come playoff time.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, I think, the thing that we talked about when we kind of opened the pod about the team being inconsistent and variable game to game. It's just like so many, you know, Josh Allen and Sean McDermott teams that we've seen in years past. If they can put together all the phases that they need to, nobody will stop them. It's just the reality of the talent that they've assembled, and it's part of the reason that I trust Brandon Bean anytime he makes moves, because he pays attention to depth. He pays attention to the combination of players. He's smart with his money, and he's smart with his draft picks. And I like the team. I like the roster construction. I'm very happy this season with the integration of rookies into the lineup. I can, you know, go for a little bit more specifically when it comes to Cole Bishop.
Cole Bishop, yes.
Yeah.
Cole Bishop. Let's see it. Let's make it happen.
Let's see some more. But for the most part, everybody else has played more than I believe they normally would. You know, I think we both are Javon Solomon fans. I think we both are interested in Cedric Van Pran Granger. But with how good this offensive line is playing, don't mess with it. No. Just to try to get a rookie on the field. Let him cook behind, you know, behind the scenes. Yeah. And also, you know, when I look at James Cook and Ray Davis, I see two bell cow backs. I don't see a 1A, 1B. I see two backs who could both handle the 20 plus touches a game. And so what that looks like to me is that, you know, even as much as we might love James Cook, if he commands a pretty big contract at the end of next year, we could probably see him walk and the Bills try to get a compensatory with Ray Davis and the wings ready to take that workload.
Absolutely. And then plenty of draft capital here lining up for the 2025 draft, as Bean has done a great job accumulating a stable of draft picks they could use to potentially continue to build towards the future of this roster. All right, JJ, great thoughts on the win for the Bills. Great win overall for the Bills. We now head into Chiefs week, my friend, and I'm looking forward to talking about that one because it's going to be interesting for so many different reasons. But for all of you listening at home, this is the last time that you will have to listen only to this podcast, because starting with our Chiefs preview, we are heading to YouTube. But until then, stream or download us wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, and as always, go Bills.
Go Bills.